Federal leaders like you know that modernizing IT requires updated technology and a culture shift. Stop reacting to change and start leading transformation. Visit BoozAllen.com/Federal News Radio.
17 years after the Defense Department first started development on the F-35 fighter jet, it's finally approaching the point where officials are ready to move the system into full-rate production. After numerous delays, that decision is now expected in October of next year. But the Government Accountability Office says it's still concerned that the ramp-up in production might be premature because the F-35 still has more than 24 technical deficiencies that officials deem critical. Justin Janes is Assistant Director for Contracting and National Security Acquisition Issues at GAO. He talked with me about their latest assessment of the most expensive weapon system in history.
There are two main findings that we had with respect to what they still need to complete. First is there's about 1,000 deficiencies right now that were discovered during developmental testing that still need to be resolved. The current plan for the department is to address a good portion of them after full rate production, which is sort of against their criteria, their policy for going into full rate production. So when we think about what kind of deficiencies are these, we break them into two different categories. One are critical deficiencies and those that might affect the safety or performance of the aircraft. And then there's category two deficiencies that are less risky but still need to be addressed, right? So let me illustrate what a critical deficiency might be.
Sure.
So the helmet that the pilot uses has a visor with a built-in LCD screen. And there's a night vision camera that projects images onto that so the pilot can see at night. Well, imagine the pilot trying to land on an aircraft carrier in the middle of the night with no moon. It's going to be pitch black, right? Well, the image that gets projected on the visor currently has a green glow that obscures the pilot's vision. So the Navy has halted those kind of landings on an aircraft carrier. Now, there's a fix that they're working that would replace it with technology similar to what's in the newest smartphones. So that would address the issue, but at the same time, we want to make sure these kind of issues are fixed before they get into full-rate production, where potentially we might have to make fixes after we've produced more aircraft. The second issue where we focused on in this report is with reliability and maintainability. And there are 8 metrics against which the aircraft is assessed to judge whether or not the aircraft is both going to perform basically how often you might have to repair parts or take the plane out of service to do repairs. And half of those metrics are currently underperforming. So they're below expectations at this point, and the performance growth is not there. So they're sort of stagnant. And if we don't improve those metrics, there's a couple of implications for the program. One is that it's going to reduce operational readiness because the aircraft's going to be parked getting repairs instead of performing the mission. The second piece is additional cost to the taxpayer. So when we look at the program overall, affordability is a huge challenge. The operation and sustainment costs alone are $1.1 trillion. So if we have to repair the aircraft more frequently than we expect, that's going to compound those affordability challenges.
Well, and that takes me back to the deficiencies that you talked about before, because it seems to me there's a couple different areas to talk about there. One is the criticality, in other words, the safety implications if something goes wrong. The other is how much extensive rework after production would be required to address the deficiencies. So if you got to tear apart an airframe to address a deficiency, that seems like a bigger deal than replacing tires, putting more reliable tires on the aircraft, right?
Right. That's precisely right. And so we can't say at this point how what the cost implications are because we don't yet know what the department's position on these deficiencies will be. They can take 3 different courses of action. They can fix it, which could require a redesign of a component, right? They could develop an operational workaround, which means you'll have to use the aircraft, compensate by not doing certain capabilities in a way you had originally intended. And then the third is that you just accept the deficiency altogether, and that would be up to the military departments to accept. So going into operational testing, it'll be interesting to see how that goes, because a number of these are likely going to have some operational workaround in the meantime. So to the extent that they'll be able to complete all their testings with those operational workarounds will probably dictate how many will ultimately need to be fixed.
And then on the reliability and maintainability targets that you talked about, and I think people listening to this are just going to wonder, you know, this is a program that's been in development since 2001, and it's just an incredibly high number of problems to still exist after that much time. Are there any obvious answers to why that would be the case?
Right. So what's interesting is that within the contract, the contractor's held accountable for meeting 4 of the 8 reliability and maintainability metrics. And those are the 4 that are performing at or near expectations. The other 4 are the ones that are under expectations at the moment. A second compounding factor is that the program's reliability and improvement plan doesn't address these 4 metrics. So from our perspective, the department needs to take a closer look at what are the actions they need to undertake to get those reliability metrics up.
All right, let's pivot to one of the other main issues that you talk about in the report, which is the upcoming F-35 Block 4 program, which is really a modernization of a lot of the key systems on the airplane, I think. It seems unusual, I think, in most weapon systems to be starting a modernization program before the baseline program is even in full production. Tell me if that's the case, but also what are your main concerns around Block 4 at this point?
So I'm not sure if it's atypical. It can happen here and there with respect to starting modernization before the development program is fully complete. The bigger question really is, you know, why do we have concerns, right? It's in large part because they don't have a plan that's been fully developed to explain to the Congress and to the taxpayer what their schedule will be, how much this program's going to cost. I think if you look back a couple years ago, there was an estimate that this would cost about $4 billion through 2022. They've continued to revise their approach to modernization. So until we see a stable plan and a good business case moving forward, we think they should sort of slow down on moving forward with modernization.
What are kind of the elements of that business case? What should Congress require from DOD before it approves the initial appropriation of these Block 4 funds?
So this would be a full acquisition strategy, a baseline of what the program's going to be held against in terms of both cost and schedule. It would be good to see a technology readiness assessment so we know the extent to which the technologies are mature. You know, if you can recall back when this program originally started, technologies were immature, and it in large part drove the cost and schedule creeps that we saw. Another thing would be an independent cost estimate from CAPE to sort of validate the cost. So those are some of the elements we'd be looking for.
And I think DOD told you that they're planning on using a new kind of process as they go about the development work in Block 4, which they're calling continuous capability development and delivery. Tell me if I'm mischaracterizing this, but it sounds like they are going to do development while the system is being deployed at the same time. How is that different from the concurrency problems that this system suffered early on in its life and caused a lot of the knock-on effects that we're living with today?
Right. So the concurrency problems we had in the past were driven by hardware fixes, right? So we were in developmental testing and we were having to redesign pieces of the aircraft and then retrofit them later. And to date, that's about $1.4 billion. Going forward, the C2D2 is the acronym for it. So modernization will generally be driven by software updates, right, to add new capabilities and new weapon systems. So you're right. The plan is to concurrently develop many iterations of, or increments, if you will, of software at the same time. So you'd be developing, testing, and then fielding different software increments. Now, the advantage for the departments from the department's perspective is that they can get capabilities developed quicker and fielded to the customer, to the warfighter, much faster. They can prioritize requirements instead of delivering many different requirements all at once. they'll get smaller increments of that. So from their perspective, that's the advantage. We haven't assessed, because we haven't seen the full plan, how concurrency might ultimately impact this program going forward from a cost perspective, but we do know that it's something the department is looking at and looking to avoid.
But the C2D2 process, it sounds like, is potentially less worrisome because folks know how to do agile iterative software development, and it's not exactly the same thing as trying to solve hard physics problems while you're developing an aircraft.
Yeah, we haven't assessed the extent to which the department's ready to implement this new approach. It's something we'll want to look at in the next coming year. But I do think you're right. From a characterization of risk, it's less risky than if you were to do it with hardware.